Hello and welcome to our podcast, The Girls Without Tattoos. My name's Molly.
And my name's Drew.
And today we'll be analyzing The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
The novel begins with an introduction to Mikael Blomkvist, our main protagonist. He's a journalist at the magazine Millennium. He has just been sentenced to a large fine and 3 months in prison, which he will serve later in the novel, for publishing false information about financier Hans-Erik Winterstrom. Next, we meet Lisbeth Salander, our other protagonist. She and her boss at Milton Security, Dragan Arminsky, are meeting with Dirk Frode because Milton was hired to investigate Blomkvist. Salander tells Frode that Blomkvist doesn't seem to be corrupt and she believes Winterstrom to be deceitful. She agrees to investigate Mikael for Frode and discovered that he is divorced with a daughter and has an ongoing sexual relationship with Erica Berger, editor-in-chief of Millennium. She is married, but her husband doesn't mind her relationship with Blomkvist. Salander overall describes Blomkvist in a positive manner.
Blomkvist and Berger meet at the Millennium offices where he convinces Berger to temporarily fire him, so his conviction will have less of a chance of hurting the reputation of the magazine. Berger reluctantly agrees, and the two spend the weekend together. Dirk Frode then contacts Blomkvist, telling him that he represents Henrik Vanger, a member of the Vanger family who owns the Vanger Corporation. Frode says Vanger wants to hire Blomkvist for something, but he cannot say what. Henrik wants Blomkvist to come meet him at the Hedby Island.
We then see Lisbeth visiting her mother in a nursing home. They discuss how neither of them have spoken to Lisbeth's sister, Camilla. While spending Christmas Eve at his sister's with his daughter, Blomkvist decides to accept Henrik's offer and sets off to meet Henrik at Hedby. Meanwhile, Salander goes to Hans-Erik Winterstrom's apartment building. She checks out the electrical room and finds the wiring to Winterstrom's apartment. Next, she visits her hacker friend Plague and buys an electronic cuff from him. Back to Hedby Island, Henrik informs Blomkvist that his great-niece, Harriet Vanger, disappeared 36 years ago. She started giving him pressed flowers when she was 8, and each year after her disappearance, he has still received these flowers.
Henrik is convinced Harriet was murdered by a family member here on the island, and that her killer sends the flowers to torment him. Aware of Blomkvist's reluctance, Henrik offers him money and promises him information to expose Hans-Erik Winterstrom. With this, Blomkvist agrees to spend a year on Hedby Island, helping Henrik write his autobiography and trying to find out what happened to Harriet. Erica is not very happy with him.
Frode then tells Salander to cease her investigation on Winterstrom, but she doesn't like stopping investigations once she started. Blomkvist arrives at Hedby Island, and Henrik gives him a tour of the island. He points out some of the major suspects in the disappearance of Harriet Vanger all those years ago. Harald Vanger is Henrik's 92-year-old brother, a hermit, and lifelong member of the Nazi Party. Henrik doesn't speak to him. Isabella Vanger is 75 years old and the mother of Harriet. She was a hands-off mother with few parenting skills. Cecilia Vanger is 56, which means she was 20 when Harriet disappeared. She's Harald's daughter and doesn't associate herself with him. Henrik takes an interest in her. Her sister, Anita, lives in London.
Martin Vanger is Harriet's brother and is not a suspect because he was stuck on the other side of the island during the disappearance. Him and Harriet's father, Gottfried, drowned in a lake a year before Harriet's disappearance. Salander seemed incapable of handling her own affairs by the state, is getting to know her new guardian, Niles Bergman. Salander's old guardian was Holger Palmgren, and Palmgren helped Salander have a stable life by getting her a job at Milton Security. But Palmgren had a stroke in December, and Salander believes he never recovered from it. Bergman has taken away Salander's access to her bank accounts and asks her for inappropriate questions. Berger's Millennium and Henrik's Vanger Corporation become partners. Blomkvist is angry at first, but continues the investigation into Harriet. Cecilia and Blomkvist initiate a sexual relationship, and Blomkvist prepares to keep working on the investigation in prison. Salander's computer gets run over by a car, so she goes to ask Bergman for money to buy a new one. In exchange for the money, he forces her to perform oral sex. Salander doesn't fight it, but instead plans her revenge. She asks for more money and plans to record the footage of him raping her. However, the night takes an unexpected turn. He ties her to the bed, rapes her brutally, and holds her captive for 8 hours. She returns to Bergman's house a week later. She tasers him, ties him to the bed, tortures him, and shows him the film of him raping her. She tells him that he has to allow her complete control over her bank accounts and write convincing updates about her to the state and never allow a woman in his apartment again. She also tattoos the words, "I'm a sadistic pig, a pervert, and a rapist," all over his chest and stomach.
Blankovist gets out of prison in May and restarts his affair with Cecilia. But after Erica Berger finds Blankovist in bed with Cecilia, she decides to break things off. In June, Blankovist starts to make progress on Harriet's case and decides he needs help in the investigation. Dirge Frode recommends Salander and mentions that she investigated Blankovist. He demands the report, then sets off to meet Salander. He surprises her at her apartment, and she accepts the job as his research assistant. The two work together and discover that the names and numbers in Harriet's datebook reference a series of gruesome serial killings. As they research, an unidentified assailant fires shots at Blankovist and leaves a dismembered stray cat on the porch. Convinced that the assaults confirm they're close to a solution, Blankovist tries to track down photographs of the Children's Day parade from the day of Harriet's disappearance. In the photos, Harriet is clearly distraught, and Blankovist hopes to discover who is in the picture. Salander departs for the Wenger family archives to make sense of small parts in the serial killings, and Blankovist finally deciphers a photograph of Martin Wenger, Harriet's brother, from the Children's Day parade in 1966.
At the climax of the novel, Blankovist goes to Martin's cabin to confront him. Martin, prepared for his arrival, escorts him at gunpoint to a makeshift dungeon in the basement. Martin beats Blankovist and then admits that he and his father both carried out the murders. To Blomkvist's surprise, however, Martin does not have any knowledge of what happened to Harriet, and then he tries to suffocate Blomkvist. Salander comes in and beats Martin severely with a golf club. He escapes as she frees Blomkvist. Salander then attempts to go after Martin, him in his car and her on her motorcycle. However, Martin dies from driving into an oncoming truck. The next day, Salander, Blomkvist, and Freud agree that they will not notify the police about the murders, after seeing the whole picture. Blomkvist discovers that Harriet actually escaped to London right after she saw Martin. He contacts her and she reveals that she used Anita's identity to help her start a new life. She reunites with Henrik. Later, when Freud informs Blomkvist that Henrik no longer wants to write the book and cannot offer any useful information on Winterstrom, Blomkvist's whole reason for undertaking the project, Blomkvist is extremely disappointed. At that point, Salander offers up the information she collected about Winterstrom's financial dealings.
As the novel ends, Blomkvist writes a book to expose the Winterstrom's corrupt affairs and restore his credibility and reestablish Millennium security. Salander assumes a fake identity and drains several of Winterstrom's accounts in order to secure financial independence in the future. We see Salander make a call, and later Winterstrom resurfaces dead in a hotel room in Spain. Though Salander finally acknowledges her feelings for Blankovist and prefers to confess them on Christmas, she finds him with Erica Berger, and this is how the novel ends.
The author, Stieg Larsson, was a Swedish journalist who is dedicated to examining and critiquing Swedish society, as seen through his famous trilogy. To analyze this novel, we'll be using two theories, psychoanalytical criticism and Marxist theory.
Psychoanalytical criticism focuses on the mind itself. It analyzes why characters decide to do what they do and how this impacts the novel as a whole. This criticism shows the importance of the character progression based off major events and common symbols and themes expressed throughout.
Marxist theory, however, focuses on class distinction and conflict. It emphasizes the role that money and wealth play on a society and culture, which will be critical in the interpretation of the girl with the dragon tattoo. Marxist theory relies on effects of money and privilege while criticizing capitalistic ideas. So to begin, we are going to analyze the character of Lisbeth Salander. In my opinion, she represents the lowest of the low class in economically and socially.
There's a quote in the book that explains the impact of what she had to go through. She grew up surrounded by girls who were forced to perform some sort of sexual act and never reported it. She learned to know that this is the natural order of things. Quote, as a girl, she was legal prey, especially if she was dressed in a worn black leather jacket and she had pierced eyebrows, tattoos, and zero social status. End quote.
I think Larson brings up an interesting point when he is talking about her assumption of where she's placed in the class systems and how she already assumes where she's placed and how people will treat her just because of her economic status.
Exactly. She was deemed unimportant as someone who wouldn't be missed because of how she looked and where she came from.
It also connects to the psychoanalytical theory and the fact that she has grown up with this mindset and that she has warped her mind to believing that she does not deserve better because she has not been given better and she has not grown up with that privilege that other people have been given.
She believes that only status and wealth can protect her from the violence she had to endure.
Moving on to the first rape encounter we see from Elizabeth, we see the quote, Bergman came around the desk to show her the statement of her bank account, which he knew down to the last oar, although it was no longer at her disposal. He stood behind her. Suddenly, he was massaging the back of her neck, and he let one hand slide from her left shoulder across her breast. He put his hands over her right breast and left it there. When she did not seem to object, he squeezed her breast. Salander did not move. She could feel his breath on her neck as she studied the letter opener on his desk. She could reach it with a free hand, but she did nothing. If there was one lesson Holger Palmgren had told her over the years, it was that impulsive actions led to trouble, and trouble could have unpleasant consequences. She never did anything without first weighing the consequences.
This quote connects a lot to the psychoanalytic theory.
Yeah, it does. We definitely see Elizabeth's mindset and how she progresses throughout the quote into initially thinking that she has to react and maybe even murder this man, into maybe saving it for later, or maybe this is not the best reaction right at this moment.
She uses her past memories and experiences to shape how she is right now and have her help her in the situation. It has basically become her immediate reaction to do this instead of acting on her impulse.
Yeah, it's almost as if these memories have become a part of her unconscious mind, and the fact that she doesn't seem like she deserves a different reaction to certain circumstances because they've become so natural to her.
She believes she has to be extremely careful throughout her life, which is shown throughout the entire novel, especially when she plans out the torture and blackmail of Bergman.
I think it's interesting also how Bergman views Elizabeth in an inferior way due to the fact that he knows that she's been institutionalized and how she's economically unstable, as said by the government and the state.
Because the government gave Bergman this much control over Elizabeth, his status is automatically above hers.
And all this contributes to the development of Elizabeth as a character.
Now, moving on to Mikkel.
I think as we look at the character Mikkel, we have to look at how basic his character is and the fact of how he's middle class, male, and has no really past experiences that are affecting his decisions in the present. What do you think about this, Drew?
I think the only event that has really shaped Mikkel's life was the fact that he really invested himself into the investigation about Winnestrom, and he decided to publish those accusations and that information, which ultimately turned around on him, and he was publicly ridiculed and deemed not a good journalist anymore. And so that's why he decided to take on the investigation of Harriet and really change his whole life dynamic.
Do you think there's any reason why he was so invested in this investigation with Harriet and how that has impacted his view on women?
I think that maybe he was invested in Harriet because he wanted to do something, maybe, because he felt like he couldn't do a lot with the investigation regarding Winnestrom, and he only had so much information, which was pointed out several times in the book, because he was offered a lot of information by Henrik and by Elizabeth. And so with the investigation with Harriet, he really dove in to try and prove something, maybe. I'm not really sure. What do you think?
I think it says a lot about how his respect of women, because we see this very nice and innocent side of him come out when he's talking with Elizabeth and how he treats her, whereas with his previous business partner,
it's a little more aggressive, and it's very more like the relationship we see before Martin and Harriet. And I think it's interesting that he dove completely into this case, expecting to know the cruelties that are happening to women. As we begin to look at Marin Vangar, I think it's important that we start from the beginning, looking at his childhood.
So, obviously, he began his life in the upper class. He was raised on an island with his industrial-owning family, who obviously had a lot of money. But he grew up with a father who was obviously very sadistic. He raped, killed, and tortured women. And he eventually taught Martin how to do that.
Yeah, and I think it's important to also see, as relation to this woman, how his mother was not in the picture and how she was usually drunk at most points and how he never had that female strong figure in his life, so he resorted to only seeing his dad's point of view of woman.
And I think his mother's role in his life really played a part in his lack of empathy towards them and the fact that he didn't see them as really human, especially because at one point he was bragging to Mikkel that he had a woman downstairs it locked up while they were all upstairs.
It's also important to look at the psychological impact that his father had on him and how these ideas were ingrained within him from the very beginning of his life, and how even though these ideas were ingrained in him, he still came across as a very pleasant, likable man who was unsuspected of the murder from the beginning.
Exactly. So throughout the novel, people always commented on how friendly he was, and even Mikkel trusted him throughout the novel.
And as we look at these two characters, Lisbeth and Martin, side by side, I think it's important to see that society has branded Lisbeth as psychologically unstable and unworthy due to the fact that she's been victimized throughout her entire life, whereas we see no brands on Martin, even though he is the one with the psychological damage where he's performing these horrific acts on other people. And do you think these assumptions are due to the fact that they're economically in different places?
Actually, I think quite the opposite. I think that you would expect assumptions to be made based on their economic status, which there is, but they lived out complete opposite of the expectations they were given. Because obviously from the beginning, Lisbeth wasn't expected to be much. But instead, she was the one who took control of her life, and she knew what she wanted and went after it and made sure that it happened. And while Martin did the same, he succumbed to the terrible acts he was taught to as a child by his father.
Are scary books keeping you up at night?
Us too.
Well, we have the perfect solution for you.
The Nightlight.
Sure to keep you away from any unwanted characters. Nightlight, keep on reading.
Overall, The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo was a very intriguing and fascinating read, with character dynamics that captured your attention. As you dove into the novel, the class distinctions and psychological developments were emphasis points that Stieg Larsson drew upon for the growth of societies.
Thanks so much for listening. Catch us next time on The Girls Without Tattoos.